47 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Now we are engaged in a great civil war, testing whether that nation...
You are listening to the voice of Orson Welles reading Abraham Lincoln's Gettysburg Address, a page from this Sunday's edition of Anthology. This is Fleetwood. Each Sunday at 1, WRCA, in cooperation with the Poetry Center of the YM and YWHA, 92nd Street and Lexington Avenue in Manhattan, brings you Anthology, a selection of readings from poets, past and present, and the music to accompany their poetry. Our guests this Sunday by transcription, Orson Welles, Walter Houston, and Carl Sandburg. Lilacs last in the dooryard bloomed, and the great star early drooped in the western sky in the night, I mourned, and yet shall mourn with ever-returning spring. Ever-returning spring. Trinity, sure to me you bring, lilac blooming perennial and drooping star in the west, and thought of him I love. Six lines by Walt Whitman, which open the great American poet's touching memorial to Abraham Lincoln. Today, as all America commemorates the anniversary weekend of Lincoln's birthday, February 12, 1809, we'll listen to 30 minutes of poetry and prose written and spoken by many of his fellow countrymen who dearly cherish his memory. Of our 16th president, Louis Untermeyer wrote, "The figure of Lincoln looms over the American landscape like a sky-searching mountain peak. It seems to have stood there since the beginning of time, and it is hard to realize that it is scarcely 100 years old. Here, truly, history has become the lengthened shadow of a man, a mortal man who has become an immortal legend." In a poem by Edwin Markham, the late Walter Houston speaks of Lincoln, the man of the people. The musical setting was composed and conducted by Lehman Engel.
The color of the ground was in him, the red earth, the smack and tang of elemental things, the rectitude and patience of the cliff, the goodwill of the rain that loves all leaves, the friendly welcome of the wayside well, the courage of the bird that dares the sea, the gladness of the wind that shakes the corn, the pity of the snow that hides all scars, the secrecy of streams that make their way under the mountain to the rifted rock, the tolerance and equity of light that gives as freely to the shrinking flower as to the great oak flaring in the wind, to the grave's low hill as to the Matterhorn that shoulders out the sky. Sprung from the west, he drank the valorous youth of a new world. The strength of virgin forests braced his mind. The hush of spacious prairies stilled his soul. His words were oaks in acorns, and his thoughts were roots that firmly gripped the granite truth. Up from log cabin to the Capitol, One fire was on his spirit, one resolve, to send the keen axe to the root of wrong, clearing a free way for the feet of God, the eyes of conscience testing every stroke to make his deed the measure of a man. He built the rail pile as he built the state, pouring his splendid strength through every blow. The grip that swung the axe in Illinois was on the pen that set a people free. So came the captain with the mighty heart, and when the judgment thunders split the house, wrenching the rafters from their ancient rest, he held the ridgepole up and spiked again the rafters of the home. He held his place, held the long purpose like a growing tree, held on through blame and faltered not at praise. And when he fell in whirlwind, he went down as when a lordly cedar, green with boughs, goes down with a great shout upon the hills and leaves a lonesome place against the sky.
From the poetry of Edwin Markham, we turn to the moving poetic prose of Carl Sandburg. Our foremost annotator upon the life and times of Lincoln, Sandburg wrote The Prairie Years and The War Years, a six-volume work which won the Pulitzer Prize. Carl Sandburg reads first an excerpt from Lincoln the Dreamer.
Death was in the air, so was birth. What was dying, few could say. What was being born, none could know. Lincoln. Did he gather the feel of the American dream and see its kindred over the earth? Saying, the strongest bond of human sympathy outside of the family relation should be one uniting all working people of all nations and tongues and kindreds. Let not him who is houseless pull down the house of another, but let him labor diligently and build one for himself, thus by example assuring that his own shall be safe from violence when built. As labor is the common burden of our race, so the effort of some to shift their share of the burden onto the shoulders of others is the great durable curse of the race. I hold, if the Almighty had ever made a set of men that should do all of the eating and none of the work, he would have made them with mouths only and no hands. And if he had ever made another class that he had intended should do all the work and none of the eating, he would have made them without mouths and all hands. The same spirit that says, you toil and work and earn bread and I'll eat it. No matter in what shape it comes, whether from the mouth of a king who seeks to bestride the people of his own nation and live by the fruit of their labor, or from one race of men as an apology for enslaving another race. That is the same tyrannical principle. The sheep and the wolf are not agreed upon a definition of the word liberty. Lincoln, he was a dreamer. He saw ships at sea. He saw himself living and dead in dreams that came. Into his secretary's diary, December 23, 1863, went an entry. The president tonight had a dream. He was in a party of plain people, and as it became known who he was, they began to comment on his appearance. One of them said, he's a very common-looking man. The president replied, the Lord prefers common-looking people. That is the reason he makes so many of them. Lincoln. He spoke one verse for then and for now. If we could first know where we are and whither we are tending, we could better judge what to do and how to do it.
The Battle of Gettysburg, one of the bloodiest battles of the Civil War, was fought bitterly from the 1st to the 3rd of July, 1863. In November of the same year, the battlefield was dedicated as a national cemetery by the president. His speech took only about 2 minutes to deliver. The newspapers, devoting much space to a two-hour oration by Edward Everett, belittled and buried it. But the words survived and have become a model of American speech because of their eloquence and biblical simplicity. Again from his works on Lincoln, we'll listen to Carl Sandburg reading a prelude to the Gettysburg Address. Orson Welles delivers the famous Lincoln speech, and Carl Sandburg speaks of the events following that now never-to-be-forgotten moment in American history. Here first is Carl Sandburg.
Country cottage over the land, a tall old clock in a quiet corner told time in a tick-tock deliberation. Face and dial of the clock had known the eyes of a boy who listened to its tick-tock and learned to read its minute and hour hands. And the boy had seen years measured off by the swinging pendulum, and grown to man's size had gone away. And the people in the cottage knew that the clock would stand there, and the boy never again come into the room and look at the clock with the query, "What is the time?" In a row of graves of the unidentified, the boy would sleep long in the dedicated final resting place at Gettysburg. Why he had gone away and why he would never come back had roots in some mystery of flags and drums, of a national fate in which individuals sink as in a deep sea, of men swallowed and vanished in a man-made storm of smoke and steel. The mystery deepened and moved with ancient music and inviolable consolation, because a solemn man of authority had stood at the graves of the unidentified and spoken the words, "We cannot consecrate. We cannot hallow this ground. Brave men, living and dead, who struggled here, have consecrated it far above our poor power to add or detract. From these honored dead, we take increased devotion to that cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion. To the pendulum swing of a tall old clock in a quiet corner, they might read those words, while outside the windows the first flurry of snow blew across the orchard and down over the meadow. The beginnings of winter in a gunmetal gloaming to be later arched with a star-flung sky."
Orson Welles reads the Gettysburg Address.
47 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Now we are engaged in a great civil war, testing whether that nation, or any nation so conceived and so dedicated, can long endure. We are met on a great battlefield of that war. We have come to dedicate a portion of that field as a final resting place for those who here gave their lives that that nation might live. It is altogether fitting and proper that we should do this. But in a larger sense, we cannot dedicate. We cannot consecrate. We cannot hallow this ground. The brave men, living and dead, who struggled here, have consecrated it far above our poor power to add or detract. The world will little note nor long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here. It is for us, the living, rather, to be dedicated here to the unfinished work which they who fought here have thus far so nobly advanced. It is rather for us to be here dedicated to the great task remaining before us. But from these honored dead, we take increased devotion to that cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion, that we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation, under God, shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
And now, here again is Carl Sandburg.
Lincoln had given his speech at Gettysburg, and the ride home to Washington took until midnight. Lincoln was tired, talked little, stretched out on one of the side seats in the drawing room, and had a wet towel laid across his eyes and forehead. He had stood that day the world's foremost spokesman of popular government, saying that democracy was yet worth fighting for. He had spoken as one in mist who might head on deeper yet into mist. He incarnated the assurances and pretenses of popular government, implied that it could and might perish from the earth. What he meant by a new birth of freedom for the nation could have a thousand interpretations. The taller riddles of the democracy stood up out of the address. It had the dream touch of vast and furious events epitomized for any foreteller to read what was to come. His cadences sang the ancient song that where there is freedom, men have fought and sacrificed for it, and that freedom is worth men's dying for. For the first time since he became president, he had, on a dramatic occasion, declaimed Jefferson's proposition: all men are created equal. Leaving no other inference than that he regarded the Negro slave as a man. Back at Gettysburg, the blue haze of the Cumberland Mountains had dimmed till it was a blur in a nocturne. The moon was up and fell with a bland golden benevolence on the new-made graves of soldiers, on the sepulchres of old settlers, on the horse carcasses of which the onrush of war had not yet permitted removal. The New York Herald man walked amid them and ended the story he sent his paper. The air, the trees, the graves are silent. Even the relic hunters are gone now. And the soldiers here never wake to the sound of reveille.
Abraham Lincoln was assassinated in Ford's Theater on 10th Street in Washington, D.C., at about 20 minutes after 10 on the evening of April 14, 1865. The last beat of the great, compassionate heart came at 22 minutes after 7 on the morning of Saturday, April 15th. Although we know only through hearsay the hour of his birth, even the seconds of his death were recorded. Abraham Lincoln was then 56 years old. Of the many testimonials to his death, it was Walt Whitman who again penned a tribute which today still retains its original beauty and pathos. Walter Houston reads, "O Captain, My Captain," in which he compares the nation to a ship tossed on a dangerous sea, and Lincoln is the captain who has brought the vessel safely to shore, only to die before he reaches the port.
Oh, Captain, my Captain, our fearful trip is done. The ship has weathered every rack. The prize we sought is won. The port is near, the bells I hear, the people all exulting, while follow eyes the steady keel, the vessel grim and daring. But oh, heart, 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 oh, the bleeding drops of red, where on the deck my captain lies, fallen, cold, and dead. Oh, Captain, my Captain, rise up and hear the bells. Rise up, for you the flag is flung, for you the bugle trills, for you bouquets and ribboned wreaths, for you the shores are crowding. For you they call, the swaying mass, their eager faces turning. Here, Captain, dear father, the arm beneath your head. Is it some dream that on the deck you've fallen cold and dead? Captain does not answer. His lips are pale and still. My father does not feel my arm. He has no pulse nor will. The ship is anchored safe and sound, its voyage closed and done. From fearful trip, the victor ship comes in with object won. Exalt, O shore. And ring all bells. But I, with mournful tread, walk the deck my captain lies, fallen cold and dead.
A more contemporary portrait of Lincoln, Walter Houston concludes our program with his reading of Abraham Lincoln Walks at Midnight. Written by Vachel Lindsay at the beginning of World War I, this is a prophetic poem. In a vision, Lincoln lives again, walking at midnight, passing up and down before the old courthouse which had been the scene of his many trials. Once more, Lincoln appears to take on the cares of state and the world's anguish. The poet is saying that Lincoln will always be among us. He cannot die. He cannot rest until all people are brothers. Until the world is free.
It is portentous and a thing of state that here at midnight in our little town a mourning figure walks and will not rest near the old courthouse, pacing up and down. Or by his homestead or in shadowy yards he lingers where his children used to play, or through the market on the well-worn stones, he stalks until the dawn stars burn away. A bronze, lank man, his suit of ancient black, a famous high-top hat and plain-worn shawl make him the quaint, great figure that men love, the prairie lawyer, master of us all. He cannot sleep upon his hillside now. He is among us, as in times before. And we who toss and lie awake for long, breathe deep and start to see him pass the door. His head is bowed. He thinks of men and kings. Yea, when the sick world cries, how can he sleep? Too many peasants fight, they know not why. Too many homesteads in black terror weep. The sins of all the warlords burn his heart. He sees the dreadnoughts scouring every main. He carries on his shawl-wrapped shoulders now the bitterness, the folly, and the pain. He cannot rest until a spirit dawn shall come. The shining hope of Europe free. A league of sober folk, the workers' earth, bringing long peace to cornland, alp, and sea. It breaks his heart that kings must murder still, that all his hours of travail here for men seem yet in vain. And who will bring white peace that he may sleep upon his hill again?
Next week on Anthology, we'll continue our two-week series of Americana poetry as we celebrate the birthday of George Washington. Our guests, by transcription, will be Helen Hayes and Bing Crosby. With the kind permission of the author and Simon & Schuster, excerpts from My Country by Russell Davenport. Anthology comes to you in cooperation with the Poetry Center of the YM and YWHA, 92nd Street and Lexington Avenue in Manhattan. John Malcolm Brennan, director. On Wednesday evening, February 23rd at 8:40, William Carlos Williams will appear at the Poetry Center in a reading from his works, including new unpublished poems with commentary. Anthology is produced by Steve White, written and directed for WRCA by Draper Lewis. This is Fleetwood wishing you good luck and good reading. Please join us again next Sunday at 1:00.